what is left here in the big...
Well, of course, what is left here is the body, which lies a mouldering, right, and eventually is reduced to a skeleton and so on and so forth. And, you know, we hope that eventually Frias and Mason will take place and we'll be reunited, you see. Okay? This is the traditional belief. Now, but the spirit can be hovering around the area, but the spirit could also be wherever it may be. I mean, we don't know exactly where they are, but apparently from this, the spirit was hovering around the body.
Say that again. All that again.
Okay. We have a guf and we have a neshama.
All right.
Okay? All right. The guf is buried. What happens to the neshama? Okay? So the neshama goes to Gan Eden. But where exactly is Gan Eden? First of all, we don't have, you know, we don't know exactly where it's located. We don't have the roadmap for it, okay? But secondly, from this story, obviously, there is a feeling that the neshama hovers in the vicinity of where the body lies buried. At least for a certain time, maybe it does. You understand?
You lose me. I mean, if the neshama goes to Shemayim,
right,
and you feel like Shemayim is not in, you know, every Beit Kevarot in the whole world, are you saying that the neshama stays in a certain place for a certain period of time?
Well, obviously, right? Over here, right. There is that feeling, okay?
Uh-huh.
And from this story, it would seem to give support to this idea, okay? That the neshama is in the vicinity of where the body lies buried. I don't say that it's there forever, but certainly in this particular case, the implication is, well, after all, if he came and lay down in the cemetery, obviously he was lying down next to the grave of these two women. And that's how he heard the conversation that was going on between the two spirits.
That brings up two questions.
Yes.
Number one, if the spirits are, the shaman is aware of this world,
yeah,
then I would think that they would have been aware that he's there to begin with.
Yeah.
Secondly, if it's only the shaman that's going up to Hashemayim, what is his business with a code of reeds? They're not going with the body, they're going with the shaman.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah, that's a very good question.
Logical.
Okay, yeah, that's a very logical question. I think that the answer is as follows. It's a surmise on my part. There is a story told in the Tanakh itself about King Saul. He knew that he was destined to fight the Philistines the next day. He was extremely worried as to what the outcome was going to be. He himself, of course, was a highly emotional and not altogether rational person. And so he decided that he was going to communicate with the dead spirits in order to find out, okay? So what did he do? He went to a certain woman who had a reputation as being able to raise the dead in order to communicate with them. Yeah, right. The woman of Endor. In English they call her the witch of Endor, okay?
Yeah.
But the Tanakh, they only refer to her as the woman of Endor, okay? So he went over there, and Shmuel HaNavi had recently died. And so, you know, at first, you know, she recognized King Saul, and she was very afraid because King Saul had persecuted the witches and ordered them, you know, to be killed. And so therefore she was practicing this surreptitiously, and here, you know, he comes to her and asks her to do precisely what he was killing other witches for, okay? So she made him promise, you know, that he would not punish her if she complied with his request. So he promised her. And lo and behold, whose spirit did she raise? She raised the spirit of Shmuel, okay? And Shmuel's spirit was dressed in the garments in which he had been buried, you see. So that this we can understand. Of course, the rest of the story goes, you know, that Shmuel said to him, number one, why did you bother me? Why don't you let me lie in peace, right? And secondly, he says to him, tomorrow you're going to be here together with me.
And that's Saul.
Meaning, you know, Saul, right? Meaning that, of course, Saul would be a dead man by this time tomorrow. Which, of course, happened. I mean, he fought against the Philistines, and a very tragic end that he had over there. raises a lot of questions, because what happened was that Saul was very grievously wounded, his son Jonathan was killed, others, he suffered a tremendous defeat at the hand of the Philistines, and in his agony he did not want the Philistines to find him alive, because he was afraid that they would use him as a trophy, so to speak, in order to proclaim their victory and torture him and who knows what else, like what you read of this business in France the other day, where they took up the body of a Jew and they impaled it, in order to, right. Yeah, this is in a cemetery in southern France, in Carpentras.
When did this happen?
Just about a week ago. Papers and everything.
About a week ago, it happened.
They dug up a body and impaled it?
Yeah.
They desecrated the cemetery.
They desecrated the Beis Salem.
And then they dug up the body of a newly buried person,
newly buried Jew,
and they impaled him on an umbrella handle.
Yeah.
Not on a handle.
Did they find who it was?
Not yet. First they had a theory that it was RFE. Then they went away from that, and now they think it's like neo-Nazi skinheads. Which I think if you can interpret it, means they don't know what they're doing.
Exactly, they don't know.
Yeah. And there was an Arab group that took credit for it, though.
Oh, yeah, immediately, yes.
Imagine the hatred. They won't let the dead rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
Arabs are irrational.
Yeah, anyway, it's a very, very tragic story. But I mean, the point that I'm making is simply that, the way they describe Shmuel, he's dressed, he arose in the garments that he was wearing. So if that is the case, then the same thing, this girl who is dressed in the Machzela Shelkonim, in the mat of reeds, this is the way she would appear if her spirit were to
ascend. I understand what you're saying,
okay.
If the spirit is different from the body,
yeah,
then how could it take the form of the body? The spirit is a non-entity, it's not corporeal, it's not...
Yeah, but the spirit is still tied to the body.
In the same shape.
This is very difficult for us to say exactly. Yeah, it's very difficult for us. I mean, after all,
of course.
There are traditions, about what happens. We know one thing: we know that we have a neshama. We know that the neshama has to give a din v'cheshbon to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, right, for the kind of life that we live. We know that ultimately the neshama is going to go to Gan Eden. Before it goes to Gan Eden, it goes through a process of purification, whatever it may be, and so on. So, I mean, these are some of the things that we know, but we can't know every single detail. I mean, this is why in the Gemara they're not altogether certain either. I mean, what's happening?
Also,
over
the
here.
Fact this was
yes.
something that was brought about by a witch. So we don't know that whether she used some artifice to somehow...
Yeah, you mean going back to the story of Shaul.
Or the fact that Shaul, not being a very rational character, may have seen it in his own mind.
Yeah, I understand, right, yeah.
Well,
that's at the end of Shmuel Aleph, you'll find that.
Who wrote it?
What do you mean, who wrote it?
Who wrote the Tanakh?
Well, we assume that the author of Shmuel Aleph was Shmuel. So there were others who came along too after Shmuel and who wrote. I mean, we don't have the names of each and every author, you see, of every single book in the Bible. But there's Gemara and Bava Basra where they try to say who wrote this and who wrote that and so on and so forth. So Shmuel was one of the authors, but you're right. I mean, Shmuel Beis, what we call Shmuel Beis, is really already after the death of Shmuel. So somebody else had to write it. So that
it
itself is another.
There.
Well, as I say, that in itself is another problem. I mean, who authored this particular book and the other one? But the Gemara discusses it to a certain extent in Bava Basra, as to who authored some of the different parts of the Bible. For example, I mean, even about the Torah, the question is whether Moshe Rabbeinu authored even the last 8 psukim in which his death is described.
Mm-hmm.
Or did he not? Was it Yehoshua who wrote down the details for that? Understand?
Mm-hmm.
So according to the opinion that says Yehoshua, okay, we can understand that. I mean, right after the death of Moshe, this was written. But according to, those who hold the opinion that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote even those pesukim that deal with his death, then they say he did it with a tear in his eye, and he did it because the Bnei Shalom was dictating to him what to write.
I'm more inclined to believe that after reading about the Arizal, who had the Rilke Kodesh.
Yeah.
And certainly a Moshe Rabbeinu should have it.
Right, absolutely. No question about that.
Everything.
Yeah. So that's why I say we're dealing with an area, you know, which I can't give you 100% black and white answers, because even the Gemara over here, you see, they say, well, let's continue. It says, "Dilma in the Shachvina Shoki v'Yotzim." We were trying to, prove the point from the story that, you know, they know what's going on. Well, how do they know? Is it because they can see us and listen to us and find out what we're doing? Or maybe by another means? And this is what the Gemara suggests over here. Maybe someone else died, and after he died, so then he told them, you know, what had taken place.
I'm inclined to believe that more than the other thing, because evidently they can't see.
Right.
Because the man was laying there between the two graves.
Yeah. Well, as I say, we can see that the Gemara itself is not giving us a 100% definite answer, and of course it now brings another story, again, questioning how can there be communication, okay? So here's the next story. Toshba. Come and listen to the following story. This is Zeirei HaMamafkin Zuzi Gavi Yishpuz Chazlei, okay? Zeirei deposited money with his balabasta, in other words, his landlady, okay? You know, familiar with the word ushpizin and so on?
Mm.
Okay.
Of course.
Huh?
We
invite guests.
So that's
the basic idea.
Yes.
Now, this is the woman who takes in guests,
yes.
Okay? In other words, she was like his landlady, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he deposited money with her. Not to remember again that there were no banks. You had to go on a trip, and you wanted to leave behind money. So what did you do? You couldn't put it in the bank or anything like that. So you asked somebody, do me a favor, please, and let me deposit what I have with you, and you'll keep it for me until I return. Okay? This is what we call a pikodon. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Pikodon, right. And the verb for that is mafkid.
To deposit.
Yeah, a person who deposits, right, mafkid, okay? So...
Oh, depositor is mafkid?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, here we have a mafkid, Zuzei Gavish Vizkazdei, okay? So, he deposited coins, he deposited money with his balabasta, Adoso, right? Until he should come back, the Ozil Beirav, okay, and then he went to the Beirav. It could either mean to the house of Rav, or he went to the yeshiva in order to study, whatever it may be. Shechiva. What happened? By the time he got back, she had passed away. Notice that the word shechiv and shechiva is a nice way of saying, had died. Literally, it means had gone to sleep. Okay, all right. So she passed away. Ozal Basra, the Chatzar Moves, so he went after her to the Chatzar Moves, literally the courtyard of death. In other words, he went, to the Beis Seder. Okay.
See a good story.
Yeah. Omar Lo, so he said to her, Zuze Hecha, tell me, where am I? Susan, where's my money? So on one day she said to him, Zil Shakyun Hu Mitusi Bitzinora Dadasha, says, go and take it from underneath. Mitusi means underneath, like Matakas in Hebrew. Underneath the Tzinora Dadasha. What is the Tzinora Dadasha? The answer is, this is like a pipe or a post upon which the door swung back and forth. Okay?
Like a hinge.
Right. Right, except that she's not talking about the hinges. What she's talking about specifically is like a post in which, you know, the door was mounted in order to be able to swing back and forth. But naturally, the post has to have a hole in the ground. So where did she put the money for safekeeping? She put it into the hole over there, and probably, and presumably then she put the post on top of it in order to keep it secure. Okay. Bedoch Planen, a certain place, and she explained to him, you know, exactly where. So now the question is, the Emolo Le'imo, at the same time, you know, that, you know, she gave him instructions as to, you know, where he could find his money, she also gave him a message. She said to him, tell my mother to Shadali Masrikai Beguftai De Kuchalo Bahade Planisa. So you tell her that she should send my comb, Masrek in Hebrew, Masrikai, my comb, the Guftai De Kuchalo. This is a tube in which she kept her the kachal. This is a you know, like a bluish pigment that they would use in order to smear it over here,
coal.
Over the eyes.
Coal,
isn't it?
Right.
Yeah,
K-O-H-L.
Coal. Yeah.
Coal.
Yeah. So tell her to send me that, right?
Like a mascara.
Yeah, yeah, like mascara. Exactly. Right. Okay. And send it with whom? With a certain woman, Planisa. The Yaslamacho, who is going to come here, in other words, is going to be buried over here tomorrow, right? Who's dying and coming here tomorrow. So, Alma, all right, so in this story again, we say, what? Yade? That, you know, the dead are aware of what's going on, that they can communicate. So, they give another explanation. It says, Dilma, perhaps, Duma kodim emakrisahu. Maybe Duma, who is like the Malach in charge of graves, maybe he comes and tells them who is going to show up tomorrow morning, you know, to be buried over there. So that's how the message came. Not that,
you know. Planisa wasn't going to come to visit. She was going to die.
She was going to die, right. She was going to die. And so how did she know that, you know, how did the dead woman, the landlady, know that so-and-so is going to die and be buried over there? So the answer is that maybe Duma, who, as I said, is the Malach in charge of the grave, he came and he told her.
So
he announced it beforehand.
So this poor man is going to have to go to Planisa and say to her, I have a message for you. You're going
to
die
tomorrow.
He doesn't
have to tell the whole story. He doesn't have to tell the whole story. He simply say, take this comb, take this tube, of
Kahal.
Take
it
with you?
And yeah, keep it on you. Something like that.
I see.
Alright.
You ask a very good observation, by the way.
You said you're going to die tomorrow. And
yeah.
Okay.
Right. I'm sure he didn't tell her the whole story.
Alright, this is good, huh?
Anyway, it's some very interesting you got, I have to say. Okay. So, again, a third story about communication. Toshma. So how about the following story? The Abuhid of Shmuel, Shmuel's father, Havako Matkede Gabe Zuzidi Yaspe. He had, you know, charge of money that belonged to Yosemite. Okay? In other words, they had, Shmuel's father had collected money for Yosemite.
For what?
Orphans.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And, you know, he was in charge of them. Okay. Kinoch Napshe. When he died, Lo Hav Shmuel Gabe. Shmuel was not present over there, you know, where he was. And you know what happened? Havako Korole Bar Ochel Zuzi Diasme. So people started in to say to Shmuel, they called him, you son of the person who ate up the money that belonged to orphans. Naturally, he felt horrible, you know, to be accused, in other words, as being the son of a man who had defrauded the orphans and the money that was due to them. So what happened? Ozala Basre the Chatzabobis. So he went seeking him, you know, in the Beis Elam. Omar Lahu, and he said to him, he says, but he said to them, Lahu means to them, Okay? Because Omar Lay would be to him, you have to get to know a little bit Aramaic grammar too, you know. Lay in Aramaic means to him, but Lehu means to them. All right, so he said to them, to whom? Obviously, you know, to some of the other spirits that were in the Beis Elam over there. He said to them, Be'ina Abba, we're looking for father. Or I'm looking for father. Omulei, excuse me. I translate the word Abba as father, but in reality it's also a name, as you're aware. Okay? It's a name. Abba is also a name. There are people who are called Abba into this very day, like Abba Ivan, for example. Okay? But this is their name. So he says, I'm looking for Abba. Okay? So, Amulei, they said to him, Abba Tuma Yiko Hocha. There are plenty of Abbas over here.
That's for sure.
So he said to them, Be'ina Abba Baraba, I want Abba, the son of Abba. Omule, Abba Baraba Name, Tuva Yikochocha. So he said, there are plenty of Abbas, the sons of Abba, over here too. Omalahu, so he said to them, Be'ina Abba Baraba Abuha de Shmuel, I want Abba, the son of Abba, who is the father of Shmuel. Hecha. Where is he? So Amulei, they said to him, Solek lemesifto derakia. He has gone up to the yeshiva up in heaven.
That's the spirit.
Right, the spirit of Shmuel's father has gone up to the yeshiva Shelmat, right? The clothes are down there, right, but his spirit is up in heaven, okay? Ad hochi. And while he was there, Chazi the Levi, the Yosef Avrai, while he was in the Beis Elam, he noticed that Levi's spirit was sitting there outside. In other words, instead of being up in heaven, it was around the Beis Elam.
Levi?
Levi was a scholar, a famous scholar also, okay? But apparently he either he committed some indiscretion or there was some fault, you know, that they found in his character. So they didn't immediately let him go into the yeshiva shalmala, okay? The heavenly yeshiva. I know there's another Gemara which speaks about Levi that he wanted to show off how the Kohen Gadol prostrated himself in the Beis Hamikdash on Yom Kippur, and he had no right, you know, to try to demonstrate this, because this was something that belonged only to the prerogative of the Kohen Gadol and nobody else, and so therefore he was punished by by limping as a result of it. So this may be in reference to the same thing, or maybe there was some other fault that they had found in Levi, whatever it may be. But at any rate, he was there sitting outside, not inside, you know, where Shmuel's father was. So Omalei, anyway, he said to Levi, Amai Yisabda Avrai, my Tama Lo Salikas. So he said to him, tell me why you're sitting outside, why haven't you gone up to heaven? So Amalei, oh yeah, here's the explanation. So he said to him, right, the Amalei, because they said to me, Kol kehanach shone de loy salikas the mesifta the Rabbi Epes, the achlishte ledate, all those years that you never showed up at the yeshiva of Rabbi Epes, and as a result you caused anguish to his soul, cause him anguish. So lo ma yelinin loch lemesifta derikia. So all that time, we're not going to let you go up to the heavenly yeshiva. Ad hochi v'hochi. So in the meantime, while he was busy talking to Levi, right? Do you see where I am?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where are we? Let's see. 7 lines.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Right. We're 8 lines from the bottom. Okay? So he said to him that all those years that you didn't come to Rabbi Ephesus' yeshiva, and as a result, he caused some anguish, you know, why you didn't come to hear his Torah, So this is the reason why you're going to have to stay outside over here and not go into heaven.
Was he related to this rabbi?
No, he wasn't related, but he was a great man, a great Talmud Chacham, and apparently he lived in the same area or something like that, so that he could have come. Levi should have come and shown the respect to Rabbi Epes by coming to hear his Shiur Moso, you see.
Yes.
And because he didn't come, and Rabbi Epes, you know, felt that Levi was slighting him, he felt bad. So this is why he was being punished. Okay. All right. So Avochi v'Hochi Osabuha. In the meantime, while he was busy, you know, talking with Levi and finding out why Levi was on the outside, so his father finally arrived. Chazye d'Avakabochi v'Yochi. And he noticed that his father was weeping and laughing at the same time. Omale, so he said to him, my Tamo, tell me why, for what reason? Kobochis, why are you weeping? Omale, so he answered him, he said to him, Dela gol koosis, because soon you'll be coming over here. In other words, that's the reason why I'm weeping, because soon you will be joining me over here. And you know, you'll be passing away.
Shmuel,
right. This word, the la'agol, you know, after all, when we say Kaddish, you probably would perform ba'agola. What does it mean, ba'agola, is Ban Korin? You understand? What does it mean?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I always look at the agala, you know, which means a wagon, which I know
it doesn't mean. Obviously, it doesn't mean that.
I didn't realize that.
Right. All right. So the answer is it means soon or quickly or something like that. This is what it means. Okay. And when we pray that God's kingdom will come, right? Yablich Malkusei, right? May He establish His kingdom. Chayechon of Yomechon, right? And during your own lifetime, during your own days of the Chayed of all Beis Israel, and during the lifetime of all Israel, Ba Golo. Of his man Korib, may it happen soon and speedily.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We have more men. So that's the meaning of it. So he says to him, you know, I'm weeping because soon you're going to come here. So my tama achichis, so tell me why we are laughing. So he says, the chashivas b'hayal mutuba. The reason is because in the world to come, they hold you in very great esteem. So that this is why he was happy, all right? He was sad that his son was going to die, but at the same time, he was happy that he's going to have so honored a place in the Ilam Haba. Omale, so Shmuel said to him, I chashivno, if I'm considered so important, na'iluhu Levi, then in that case, you know what? Do me a favor and let Levi go upstairs. By Uluhulu Levi, and so they let Levi come into Gan Eden.
In his course.
Alright. So Levi, Baruch Hashem, has gotten permission to, you know, to go to the heavenly court. But in the meantime, Shmuel came to his father with a problem.
What's the point of what he is?
Omale, he said to him, Zuzi di Asmehecha, tell me where is the money that belongs to the orphans? Omale, so he said to him, Zil Shakilnhu bi Amso Derechaya. He says, you go and take the box. Amso is sort of like a container or a box or something, which holds the millstones. Now, of course, you know, in order for them to grind flour, how do they grind flour? They use millstones in order to grind it, okay?
They're huge, though, aren't they?
Huh?
Aren't they huge?
Well, they could be big, they could be small, I guess. Yeah. If you see a great big one, you know, so it's a great big millstone, okay? That's what you find, like, in the kind of mills, you know, where, let's say they used to use an animal in order to push it around and so on, okay? Right, but people could also have their own personal small rechayim, right, small enough so that they could grind out a small quantity of grain.
Like a coffee grinder or whatever.
Yeah, right, in other words, instead of grinding out, you know, on a commercial basis, which is what the big ones would be, this is, you know, for private use. Right, as you pointed out, I mean, today people like to grind their own coffee beans and things like that, okay? So there was a container, a case, or whatever it is, in which he kept the rechaim, you know, he kept the millstone. So he tells him, go over there, take that case with it. And he says to him, Eli v'tatai didon umitzidi asmen. In other words, he says to him, the upper layer of money that you find and the lower layer of money that you find, this belongs to us, didon. Umitzay, however, the middle one, this belongs to Yasmin, to the Yisrael. Omalei, my time of Arta Hachi. So he said to him, so tell me, why did you do this? Why did you, in other words, you know, put the money belonging to the Yisrael in between the upper and the lower one?
So you should do
that. Yeah, right. So Omalei said to him, Iginuve Ganve, if Ganovim should come and steal, so Meganvu Medidon, let him steal what belongs to me. All right, that would of course be, you know, what was on top, right? E achla ara, and what if the, you know, the soil literally had consumed it? In other words, what if it had rotted in the ground or something like that? You know, the money had turned had rotted away. So again, he says achla medidon, then let it consume what belongs to me or to us, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's the reason why. So alma, from this we see the yading. Again, is this story doesn't it show, you know, that the dead also again have knowledge of what the chayim, you know, that the living people are doing. So he says, Dilma Shani Shmuel, maybe in this particular case it's so, but it's only because of Shmuel. Shmuel is different. Kevin the Choshev Kadmei, right? Umachizei Hanu Makom. Because he is so important, so what's going to happen? In the heavenly abode, you see, they are going to make a public announcement that Shmuel's neshama is coming over here. And therefore, because of his special merit, so that this is the reason why, you know, Shmuel's father was able to communicate with him. But would an ordinary person be able to communicate? The answer is no. This is what they're saying over here. Okay. I think it's already time to be davening, and also some of us have to leave, so we'll get going immediately. I hope we have a minion, and so we have to. Alright. Nope. Alright, so right near the bottom over here.
Okay.
Where we left off.
Alright.
I'll start with no material tonight. Listen.
Why not?
Right. Okay. Alright. Three lines from the bottom over there.
Okay.
The Afra Bionason Horobay. Now he says that Rabbi Yonason also changed his mind, because he was the one who had said previously that, as far as he's concerned, the dead have no knowledge whatever what's going on, right? So even he changed his mind. How do we know that? So we have another story. The Omar Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachmedi. Shmuel ben Nachmedi said, Omar Rabbi Yonason, the name of Rabbi Yonason, that benign the mason shemasaprim zem zeh. How do we know that the dead can have conversations one with another? Okay, so here he's quoting who? Rabbi Yonason himself. So obviously Rabbi Yonason must have changed his mind also and decided that, you know, they could also converse with one another.
Right.
Now, how do we know this? How does Rabbi Yonason derive it, in other words? So Shinema, we have a Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Vayomar Hashem Elov, that Rabbeinu Shel Olam said to Moshe Rabbeinu, this is at the very end of the Torah, you know, when Moshe is told to go up to Mount Nebo,
where he's going
to
die.
Right, so he's going to die. But before that, it says, Zos Ha'aretz, you know, Hashem showed him the land. He says, this is the land, Hashem Nishbati, Li Abraham, Li Yitzchak, Li Yaakov, Li Mor, which I swore unto Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying. So now, the question is, why does it have to say, my Li Mor? What is the purpose of the statement, Li Mor, saying?
Malay Mor, yeah.
Right, well, what is the purpose?
What does it mean, Malay Mor?
No, my, what is,
oh, is?
Lamor?
Oh,
what is Lamor?
Yeah,
what
I
is
see.
The meaning of saying? Yeah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. So the Rabbeinu Shel Olam said to Moshe, Leich Emolehem Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. You go and you tell Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. In other words, you know, after he is gone from this world, and he'll meet with Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov if Yenavel. So he's going to tell them, Shavua Shenishvati Lochem. The oath which I swore unto you, Kivor Kiam Tihod of Nechem, I have already fulfilled it for your children, for your descendants. He had sworn to Avraham, to Yitzchak, Yaakov to give them this land, And in the case of a home, I mean, it says specifically, you know, that Yadoa Teda Kiger Yes Aracha Biaslahem, you should know that your seed will one day be strangers in a land not their own, and they will be slaves unto them for 400 years, and they will be persecuted and so on, but Afrechein Yetzu Bechush Godol, then they will go out, you know, with great wealth, and of course they would wear, they would go back to the land which Abraham was promised would be for his descendants. Right. All right, so you go, Moshe Rabbeinu, and tell Abraham, Yisrael, Yaakov, that the oath which I swore unto you, I have already fulfilled it to your children. And if your opinion is that the dead, in this particular case of Yitzchak and Yaakov, right, but the dead in general don't know what's going on, so kiyom aluhu my havi, so what purpose is there for him to go and to tell them this? Obviously, if he's told to go and to tell them this,
so they don't know what,
right,
they don't
then
know?
They have to be aware, you know, of what he's telling them. Elamayde yade. So what is it, you know, that they do know? So the answer is when you know he tells them, so my hobby, what will it do, you know, what will be the effect? Elamai the yade lomele. So tell me, why do they have to know? So the answer is, l'mei malei, that's in order that they, l'mei malehu, that the, lo malei l'mei malehu, okay, yeah. Why does he have to go and tell them? In other words, why should Moshe Rabbeinu go and have to tell them?
Be required to tell
them,
yeah, they already know.
Yeah, so the answer is, l'asuke lei tivusa l'moshe. That's so that they should feel a debt of gratitude to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the reason why he should go and tell it to them. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak said as follows. He says, Kol am saper achei hameis. Whoever talks lashon hara concerning somebody who is dead, ki ilu misaper achei ho'evet. It's as though he is just talking lashon hara about a stone. In other words, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, it has no effect upon him.
Right.
Iko di amre, so are those who say de lo yade, the reason being that the dead aren't aware. The iko di amre, and there's another opinion that says the yade, no, the dead really know what the man is saying, but de lo ichpas lehu, it doesn't make any difference to them what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they're not paying any attention to what he has to say. I mean, they have other things. The best ones are.
Right.
Okay. Eini, so now the Gemara says, yeah, isn't it so? The Omar Papa. Didn't Rapapa say that Chad Ishtoi Milsa Betray Basrei Demar Shmuel tells the following story, that there was a certain man, Chad Ishtoi Milsa, and it means literally he was saying a word, but in this case, in other words, he said a not such a nice word, Basrei Demar Shmuel, concerning Shmuel. And obviously at this point Shmuel was already, I guess, up for the Yenavel, right? So what happened after he said this, you know, bad thing about Shmuel? So what happened was that a corner like a rod fell down from the roof, and it split, literally the chest which contains the skull. In other words, the cranial can. Right, the skull, okay.
Right.
So it split his skull. According to Rashi, it didn't actually split his skull, but it almost split his skull. All right. But the point is,
he was injured.
And he should also, you know, realize, you know, that you don't talk lashon hara
about the dead.
About the dead, right.
Shani.
Yeah, so they say, Shani tzuvim rabbonon. So they say, okay, remember before, another opinion said it's like saying something about a stone. So why in this case, I mean, lo and behold, this rod or this log or whatever it was, you know, that fell down from the roof, fell down upon him? So the answer is, because Shani Tzum Rabbonan, Talmud Chochem is in a different class, not just like an ordinary person. The Kucha Berichu Tova Vikori. Because Rabbeinu Shloilam himself is interested in seeking justice for his honor. For the Talmud. Right. So that's why when he said something bad about Shmuel, this is the reason why it happened. Okay, next. Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi also talks about the same idea. He says, "Kol hamsaper achad mitosen shel talmidei chachomim, nofil b'gehinom." He says that whoever goes and tells evil things after the death of talmidei chachomim, in other words, about talmidei chachomim who have
passed away,
he falls into gehinom. How do we know that? Shenemar, because there's a pasuk in Tehillim which says, "Ahamatim akal kaloilsam," that literally those who deal wickedly, "Yolichem Hashem es parlei ha'aven," God will lead them together with all the evildoers, and then Shalom al Yisrael, and there'll be peace upon Israel. Afila b'shosh Shalom al Yisrael, he explains, even at a time when there is peace upon Israel. So Yolichem Hashem es parlei ha'aven. Nevertheless, these people who are doing evil, who have spoken evil, you know, they will be punished together with the parlei ha'aven, with the other evildoers. We'll take a look at the Rashi for a moment, okay. See how he explains it. Okay, v'amati makal kaloisa. Well, let me do already from the top of the page.
Okay.
All right. First of all, the salkadatik leyad, if we say that the dead are not aware, so ein mevinim klum, they don't know anything, yet tzara the gufa, except we already said that they do feel pain in their body. Is that the only thing? So we have the story, you know. Good evening, Bob. How are you feeling? How's your back now?
Well, it's been, the accident was Thursday morning.
You had an accident?
Monday.
See, I never got
second
the story straight from Coleman exactly what has happened to you. Chachamez, literally one who tells or one who talks, you know, after a dead body. Of course, what it means, says Rashi, is Biknusu Shalmez, Achamitos, it means that you're talking bad things about a dead person after he has passed away. And so then we learned the story about this person who slandered the reputation of Shmuel.
Shmuel, right.
So it's written that Kanyumit Talola. So Rashi has to explain, you know, what does it mean? After all, this is Aramaic and not everybody understands all the words. So he says, Kone Godol, which means literally a great pipe like. Bechoved, and a heavy, great and heavy pipe, Nofal min Hagag, fell down from the roof. Tlola, he says, Tlola means Gog. Okay.
Tlola means what?
Tlola is an Aramaic word meaning Gog.
Gog
in Hebrew means a roof. So
it's a
Tlola
gun.
Means
a
roof.
Gun. Okay.
So as I say, you know, he explains what is the meaning of this. All right. So now we know that what happened was that this fell down upon him, and what did it do? It said to Bozeth that it smashed Arnako de Moche. So what is the Arnako de Moche? See, Arnok in Hebrew, the usual meaning is like a bag or a handbag or something like that. That's the normal meaning. Right.
Container.
Right. Or as Rashi says, kiss. Kiss like a pocket. Only, you know, this is what he means, is of course, you know, what we would call the skull, the cranium face, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's kiss shamayakunakwa. You know, where the brain is placed, okay? So it broke his skull. Vahamatim akalkaloisam. So Rashi explains, good evening, Stan, we're on the top of your test.
It says.
Yeah.
In the Rashi.
Doing the Rashi for a couple of moments. The middle of the second line of the Rashi on the page. Okay, it says, what is the meaning of the pasuk Vahamatim akalkaloisam? Which means literally those who carry on wickedly, okay? So he says, Le'el mine, above it, ksiv, it is written, Hey Tivad Hashem Latayvim. First of it, Amelech says, in the Pasuk, he says, O God, do good unto those who are good. V'samechle, and then right next to it, and it's written, then, V'hamatim akal kaloisam. So what does it mean, V'hamatim akal kaloisam? So he explains, Matez hamachriyim. Those who cause the decision, literally, as chobosam, of their sins, yoser alzkuyosam, to outweigh their merits, lahatoysam lachapvayva, so that it causes them to swing to the scale of
sin.
Sin. Well, let me explain. I mean, naturally, this is based upon an idea. It's an idea that we have actually in Gemara, it's in Rosh Hashanah, but then Maimonides likes to quote this particular idea to the Rambam, that a person should always look upon himself as if he is chetzio chayav v'chetzio zakai. Chetzio chayav means that half of his life is filled with things for which he deserves to be punished, in other words, sins, but chetzio chayav, things for which he is considered, meritorious, zakai, okay? And then it says that if a man sees himself, in other words, as if his sins and his merits weigh exactly the same in the balance, so then, osa mitzvah achas, if he does a mitzvah, and then of course, machriya, the chavschus, then he's going to make the balance
and the other
tip right
in a good direction.
Towards right, towards merit. If, on the other hand, he performs an aveira, then in that particular case, he, machriya the chavchayva. He causes it to tip over, to sin, okay, to guilt.
Guilt.
All right. So, therefore, what he's saying over here is he's explaining this pasuk of David HaMelech in the same terminology. What he's saying is, Hamatim HaKalkaloisa, those people who are weighing whether to do, doing it, for HaKalkaloisa, in other words, for evil. So, Yodichem HaShem is for Aleho Oven, then God will lead them together with the other sins where, so as Rashi explains, he says, Yodichem HaShem is for the oven. He says, the Gehinnom. That's where they're going. They're going to Gehinnom.
All right. Listen, go ahead. We don't want to erase my precious stories.
It is precious.
Korahim Ipninim, right? It's more precious than pearls or rubies.
Absolutely.
So are we on the right side?
Yeah, we're on the right side.
Okay, good. All right. Now, I did see one suggestion. I don't know if it's a Das Yochid, it must be, because I haven't seen any place else, that he relates the word matim, mem tes hey is literally, the root in the singular, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So he relates that to the word mito.
Mito.
Which, as we said before, in this case means the bier upon which they place the dead. And that's why we said over here, acha mitosan, in other words, that they're talking, bad things behind the bier, literally, in other words, of the dead.
As the carrying.
So maybe so.
Yes.
Okay, but Rashi makes no mention of it, notice places. So apparently, there wasn't any problem. Okay.
You mean a side note here? There's a side note here.
It's a side note, I've seen. Right. Okay. Now we continue. All right. Tana d'vei Rabbi Shmuel. The teaching of the school of Rabbi Yishmael, which says, "Im lo yisa talmid chacham she'ovar avera b'layla," if you see a talmid chacham, you see that he has committed an avera at night, "al taharer acharo bayom," then don't have evil thoughts about him during the day, meaning, of course, the following day. Why? Shemo asot tshuva, because there's a possibility that he did teshuva. So the Gemara comes along and says, what do you mean? Shemos al-Kodatech? You think maybe he did Shuvah? Elavadai asot Shuvah. Contrary, he certainly did. If he's a real Talmud Chacham and he did something bad at night, then there's no question that he must have done Shuvah afterwards. And so therefore he's a tzaddik again during the day, and don't say bad things about him.
The word avoda? Yeah. Avada?
Yeah. Vadai and
Vadai
and so on.
Vadai. What does that mean?
It means certainly.
Certainly.
Yeah.
So that's where the Yiddish word Avada comes
from. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I told you. Alle gute Werte in Yiddish that comes from the Hebrew. Or from the Gemara Lashon. Maybe Aramaic. I mean, this is an Aramaic word. But it's used all the time in Hebrew.
Yeah.
Vadai, bivadai, certainly, and so on. And today they use the word levadai, as a verb, and you mean in the sense that you you check something to make sure that it's correct.
Ah,
so, yeah.
Livade.
Yeah, livade, something like that. Yeah. So, yeah, undoubtedly, you must have done Shiva. V'hani milei bidvarim Shiva gufo. Now, where do we say that we assume that the Talmud Chacham must have done Shiva? It is with a sin which he committed with his body. In other words, he fooled around with a woman that he had no business fooling around with, or something like that. Okay, so that's a sin. Or maybe he had a couple of evil thoughts at night, and he had nocturnal emission or something. We're not specifying exactly
that. Right.
Okay.
But it's something physical.
Yeah, maybe he went to the burlesque show. I don't know. But
no,
don't hold it against
them.
The Roman
no, but
form.
They had other problems. They had, you know, the Gemara mentions, you know, theaters, circuses, those things,
the gymnasiums, which were all naked.
Right, absolutely.
Colin was telling me about someone who was on an El Al flight.
Yeah.
And he told his children to look down.
Yeah.
When they showed the movies, they looked down on the floor.
Yeah.
They're on their way to Israel, but
right,
they still have to look.
But you know, not all. I mean, I'm usually so pooped when you take a night flight, you know.
Or they
you
look down.
Have to shut your eyes and try
down,
to
there was
sleep.
The movie was some type of X-rated movie or something.
Oh, really?
Movie that they
X-rated, I can't imagine. But you know, there are occasionally R-rated movies that they show. Now, usually El Al is fairly good about that because they know that the clientele is such that they don't want to see X-rated movies.
Yeah, but some people won't even look at a movie which shows, let's say, a woman in a bathing suit or something
yeah,
like that.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
Or
right.
in a skimpy dress or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
They apparently are very susceptible to evil thoughts as a result of
yeah.
that.
Either that or they learn that they're not supposed to do it and they don't do it.
Right.
Yeah.
But they just are a little more discernible and careful.
Well, we study that about the modesty, you know?
Yeah, of course. It is. Absolutely. It's important. I remember now the last flight that we went to Israel, I think they were showing this picture, Beaches. It's not the world's greatest picture, and frankly, I didn't even bother to put in the earphones to hear what was going on.
What's her name?
Beth Midler.
Yeah. What's
a
good picture?
She's
yeah.
a Jewish girl.
I know. What's
yeah.
a good picture?
No.
Not that she's a practicing.
Should have listened to the words. Enjoy it. What's a good picture?
I really wanted to try to get a little more sleep. That was more important to me. And then coming back, they were supposed to show them the Rainmaker. Or whatever it was called, you know, the one with Dustin
Rain
Hoffman.
Rain
so they announced that for some reason or other the film is broken, it's not playing, so they put on Beaches again.
So you slept again.
But we can appreciate.
I'm surprised they don't show films in Hebrew.
Occasionally they do.
Do they really?
Yeah.
People wouldn't understand.
I've seen it as well, and then they'll have an English subtitle.
Yeah, that's what I mean, with English subtitles.
Yeah. But they're not always the best pictures either. You know, it depends what picture you're talking about, who made it, and so on. You know, you have, unfortunately, in Israel today, plenty of left wingers.
Yes, yeah.
You know, who in the name of artistic freedom are doing everything, you know. And they have no religious feeling, whatever, I mean, in what they portray.
Scruples,
yeah,
no
right,
scruples.
Right. So not everything is a blessing. The good Israeli pictures that we used to see years ago, like Salah Shabati, you know, that was a different story. It was many, many years since Salah Shabati was made. Do you remember?
When it came from Yemen or something?
Yeah,
like
right.
And
then he
has
his run-in with the bureaucracy and everything else.
Was that
English subtitles?
Yeah, they had English subtitles.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get it from the... Will I have it in the videos?
I have absolutely no idea. But if it's available, yeah. You know, there may be Jewish videos available in New York. There I would think that it might possibly
be
available. Yeah. Maybe they have catalogs. You see, I don't have a VCR.
Oh, I see.
So as a result, I don't bother with these things. But I would imagine that if you go into a store, maybe they have a catalog of the various things you can see.
So the title is?
Salah Shabati. Yeah. And that was a very funny and very delightful picture.
I'm not mistaken. We must have seen that here.
Yes. They showed it various times. I saw it at least two or three times. Yeah. you know, first one organization and another one. Yeah. Once, you know, the Hebrew showed it, another time, I think over here at Kadima they may have shown it or something like that.
Very good.
Yeah. So, the Altman.
Okay, woman gave life. Okay. So, to finish up this Maimar over here of Rabbi Yishmael, son of the Beit Rabbi Yishmael, so he says, you know, what kind of sins are we talking about that we're sure that he must have atoned for them? These are the Varm Shevu Gufo, sins that he committed literally with his own body. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But, Abol B'Mumo, no. If the sin that he committed involves money, in other words, let's say he defrauded somebody, didn't give him the money that he owes him, and things like that, then in that particular case, Adama Adilamori, then in that case, the man is not forgiven, or not to consider him, you know, as having done tshuva,
sure,
until the time that he gives it back to the person whom he has injured. And of course, that's in line again with the very famous Mishnah that we find at the end of Masechta Yuma, you know, the one that deals with the laws of Yom Kippur. And there the Mishnah says at the very end of the tractate, it says that you know, Yom HaKippurim is, you know, Mechaper, you know, that it will atone for which kind of sins? The answer has been Odom Lamokim, between the sins, you know, that the man commits, you know, against God, right?
Yeah.
But sins that are Bein Odom L'Chaveiro, sins that he commits, you know, one man against another, then Ein Yom HaKippurim Mechaper, then the day of Yom Kippur will not atone for this, Achi Ratzis Chaveiro, until he goes to that person and he makes up, you know, with him. So,
right.
Yeah. So it's a similar idea over here. The Yom Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, another statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, says, V'chob dalad b'koymais bezdim minadim al kavod harav. He says there are 24 places mentioned where the bezdin will throw into cherem anybody who insults the rabbi or his teacher or something like that. In other words, someone, you know, for whom instead of showing you respect, you say bad things about that particular person. Now, of course, what do we mean by nidui? Nidui is a form of cherem wherein the person who was placed in it, people are not supposed to have anything to do with him, not to talk to him, not to to bring him food and things like that. You see, that they're not supposed to have anything to do until, of course, what happens? He has to change his way, ask forgiveness, and so on and so forth. And then the Besdin has the power, of course, to annul the nidui. All
it's
right?
Almost like an excommunication.
It is. It's a form of excommunication. Exactly. That's what it is. Of course, we don't have the right to do it today, needless to say. But
there's no Besdin that can do it.
Yeah, there's no Besdin that has. I've seen, you know, Besdins that claim that they put people in cherem. For example, many, many years ago, when Mordechai Kaplan came out with his first book, Judaism and Civilization, okay? Which was considered quite revolutionary in those days among American Jews. So there were Orthodox Rabbonim who declared, okay, we hereby place him into cherem.
That was the basis for Reconstructionism?
Yeah, right. This was the foundation of Reconstructionism, how it started. No. So, I mean, between you and me, if a Bezdin in America comes and says that they're putting so-and-so into cherem, doesn't mean a darn thing. Doesn't. Who's going to stop talking to Mordechai Kaplan? Who's going to start, or anybody
well,
else who's
really
placed on cherem? So it doesn't mean anything. It's more like an action, you know, and but it doesn't really have any effect. And if Satmar or Bezdin comes along and puts Lubavitch in cherem, or vice versa, I mean, does it have an effect? Except for among a few Mishagoyim who may come to blows because of it. Or maybe they'll boycott, let's say, Meal Mart, which is, he's a supporter of Satmar, so they boycott the Meal Mart stores instead, or something like that. I mean, it's, you know. But it doesn't mean anything to the average person. I mean, would I hesitate to go in, for example, to a Meal Mart store in order to buy prepared food? I know it's strictly kosher. And Satmar Hashgacha is as strict as anybody else as far as I'm concerned and so on. And to get involved in a fight between Satmar and Lubavitch, I mean, this is not my...
not your cup of
tea.
Yeah,
it's my cup of tea, exactly. So, but in those days, when a Bezdin had power, then if I, you know, place somebody in nidui, you have two different terms. I mean, there's only a technical difference between what is the difference between the cherem and nidui, okay? But if you place them under the ban, which is how they usually translate the word nidui, so in that particular case, you know, it could be a very severe punishment for that person until he did tshuva and he begged forgiveness, you know, for what it is that he had done wrong, okay?
When I went to the wedding, I went to Hannah Kadner's wedding. She married a satmar.
Yeah.
And
who got married?
A young woman. She was from originally from Kiryat Malachi. She taught at the yeshiva. She lived with Rabbi Edelman.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Dark-skinned girl?
Dark-skinned girl. She married a satmar.
Uh-huh.
And when they had the meal, it went off very nicely. There were no altercations, nothing.
Everybody
was in the most... Huh?
You were there?
Yeah. It was very nice.
It was in New York?
Yeah, New York. Right. 770...
No, it was held at 770, yes.
Satmar walked into 770?
All right, now this is... See, I can tell you the whole thing. First of all, very interesting. The wedding was in an ulam across from 770. We all went for Ma'arib in 770.
Yeah.
Satmar obviously did not go in for Ma'arib.
Uh-huh.
But they actually, they all did mincha together when they were over in the ulam. Then we we went back to the ulam for the wedding. They all went in together. They usually sat at separate tables. They all danced together. Everybody danced together. Very nice. Everybody conducted themselves. The satmar did not eat because the kashrut of Lubavitcher Rebbe was not high enough. It's not about eichud.
Where is 770? What is 770?
770 Eastern Parkway.
It's like everybody said number 24. You're gonna laugh. I don't know
this
what 770 is.
This is the White House of the Lubavitcher
Movement. 770 Eastern Parkway is the world headquarters.
I see. Oh, okay.
Movement. It's a very rundown area.
I've seen it on TV.
You get to that particular, those few streets, it's very, very nice.
Yeah. So the Satmar don't think it's kosher enough.
No.
What time did they done?
But the Lubavitcher, as I say, they reciprocate.
You know what you're going to say, Lubavitcher Rabbi came there after. Yeah.
They refuse to eat
Satmar. No.
And Lubavitcher refused to eat
Satmar. Exactly. We did it.
There's no feuding.
This is in the winter time.
Satmar is no problem by the time you go late.
Oh, Satmar. That's something else. That's the ones that say that... Israel.
This I saw. Right.
When you see this,
they don't pay taxes in Israel, so forth.
Well, some of them don't. Yeah. Doesn't mean every stop, but you have some sugar among the
There's also the what's the other sect that is?
Well, the no sugar that would be what they call the Turi Kagri.
Turi Kagri. Yeah. Turi Kagri. Are there a lot of those people there?
Was that a few years ago?
No.
They actually ate the Arabs.
You sure you didn't see Groner?
I don't know. That would be only a fringe element among them. Look, I've met some Naturi Kaka, very lovely people.
I don't remember being that much.
They don't like a secular government in Israel. That's a different story.
They're
living in
Yerushalayim,
they have not deserted it.
I was right in the aisle when you walked by.
They're certainly contributing every bit that to the Israeli economy and so on and so forth. They're still using the Israeli post office, and they're still riding on Israeli buses and using Israeli money and things like that. And if they own a store in Meir Shearim, they still have to pay their taxes and so on and so forth. So, you shouldn't be guided, by all the mishigasim that you hear. Ultra this and ultra that and ultra this and this and so on and so forth. This is journalistic.
Garbage, yeah.
The Rabbeinu should excuse me. And I'm using a mild
word. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't change anything.
But,
Who else has the right?
You have some crazy fringe elements among them. I don't deny that.
Everybody.
Right. But the number of fringe elements that you have has been blown out of proportion by all the press, in order to score brownie points against Orthodox Judaism. About the Naturi Kaka in Yerushalayim. Most of them are very decent people, and they're not that crazy and everything else. I mean, so that they don't like a secular government of Israel. But most of them are not Mishogim. You do have a fringe element among them who are Mishogim.
Looks like it happened to Labor.
Yeah,
Party.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But you don't hear about them. That's
it. Exactly. when they come and they throw stones and try to set a fire, a shulamei or shiarim, that hardly makes the paper at all.
It sells paper.
Right. But, you know, they told the bus company, don't put up posters of nude women or practically nude women in the Orthodox areas of Yerushalayim.
Yeah.
And the company persists in doing it because it's making money on putting up the posters over there. So a couple of Mishugoyim, you know, broke down some of these
signs.
Not just the signs, but they destroyed the waiting cook, you know, for the bus shelter. The bus shelters, But it doesn't mean every bus shelter in Yerushalayim is down. It means two, three of them.
Just in that area.
Right, yeah. And not everyone in that area either. I mean, most of them are still functioning.
Right, because they didn't have their own pictures.
Right.
Who's the Montigna? Didn't Blum die? Blum, whatever his name, the one that was...
Blau.
He died, didn't he? So
yes.
Who was the...
Well, I guess there are others as well. I don't remember this particular part. But they do important work in Yerushalayim too. For example, they are the main element involved in what we call the Eidah HaCharedis. That's the very firm Orthodox community over there. But they're doing a terrific job of Hashkofes, for example. Every religious Jew in Israel eats from the Eidah HaCharedis. I can't say that every member of the Eidah HaCharedis will eat from some of the other Hashkofes, but there isn't a Jew in Israel who won't eat Eidah HaCharedis. Everyone. So, but you know, they had their internal political strife. I mean, Belz came along, decided to organize their own. Agudas Israel came along, decided to organize their own. Now, they gave this Yad HaReinu Machen Shabbos Vazir.
Yeah. That's a good expression.
English translation. Everyone wants to make his own Shabbos. You know? In other words, to make his own political
capital. It loses something of the
translation. Yeah. Oh, well, Abish is all healthy.
Helping, yeah. Where are we?
Yeah,
okay. So, Rabbi Yochum and Levi said that there are 24 places where the Beis Din will put under the ban, or excommunicate if you wish, because of slight paid to the honor of the Rav. Okay? The Chulon Shoninu Mishosenen. And he continues and he says, and we have learned each and every one of these 24 places in our Mishnah. So, Malay Rabbi Elosa, so, yes. David, you had a question?
I'm just asking.
You want to say
you're
in the Rashi?
No,
Gemara.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. Okay. You see where the first big line is?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco. Okay.
Six down.
Right. Six down. Six, seven down. Okay.
Seven down.
Yeah. Okay. Omer Rabbi Yeshua Melevi says, "B'chav dala ben koimos," right, in 24 different places, Beis Din medanin al kavod
harav. Yeah. Okay.
We find, in other words, a reference to the fact that the Beis Din, which is, you know, wants to protect the honor of the Rav. The Rav could be the rabbi, could be the teacher, whatever it may be, but a person, you know, whose reputation has to be protected. So Beis Din can throw under a ban of excommunication someone, you know, who slights it. All right. And we have learned all of them in our Mishnah. So Amalei Rabbi Eloza said to him, Eichom Alei, so says, where? Please tell me. So the elephant said to him, Lechi Tishka, go, you'll find. So Nofak, so he went, dark, he examined, the Yashkach Tlos, and he found exactly three references in the Mishnah. Not 24, but three. Okay? And what are they? Omalei, well, first of all, Yashkach Tlos, he found three of them. What are they? It's Hamzalzel Metilas Yadayim. One is a case where a man made light of the whole concept of washing your hands. Of course, we're talking about washing the hands before a meal, right? Right. And another one is Hamsaper Acha Mitosin Shel Tamidi Chachomim. We find it in another case that they excommunicated because someone spoke Lashon Hara concerning, you know, dead Tamidi Chachomim. And the third case was Vamegis Dato Klapimala, a person who acted very familiar with the Rabbeinu Shlomo. In other words, he made jokes about the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Okay? So now they break this down. Hamasapir Acham Itosun Shel Tamidei Chachomim Mayim. What is the case where we say that a person spoke, you know, he spoke Lashon Hara, he spoke evil concerning dead Talmidei Chachomim? What case is that? Did not. As we learned, there's a Mishnah that says in Adios. Adios is a very interesting collection of Mishnayos because it deals with different testimony that different Talmidei Chachomim gave. This one remembered an oral tradition, another one remembered an oral tradition, and the third one remembered an oral tradition, so that they're all gathered together sort of helter-skelter without any real order within that particular Masechta. But in general, we have a rule that if the testimony is found in Masechta's Adios, the chances are good. It's a 99% case that the halacha follows, okay?
Adios.
Adios, right. Adios, you know what Adios is.
This is the witness.
Testimony. So Adios means, you know, testimonies, so to speak. It's the plural of Adios.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, the Tanakh. We learned over there a Mishnah which says, who you are, who is the who? Because the answer is, you know, who gave the testimony? In this case, it happened to be a very, very famous person, and it was Akavya ben Mehalalel. Okay? And he said as follows. Ein mashkin, you do not... Okay, I'll come to that in a second. Ein mashkin lo es hagiores, velo es hamishuchreres. Okay?
Sure.
Now, if you remember this past Shabbos, we learned, you know, one of the things that we learned was the story of a man who suspects his wife of adultery, right?
Sure.
Doesn't have direct testimony that she committed adultery, but he suspects that she has committed adultery.
The trial of the pillar of water.
Right, so he puts it to the test. And what is the test? The test is that she has to drink the mayim hamba'orin, all right? She has to drink water which mixed with the ashes and the karka, the soil, the ground of the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan in those days, okay, plus the fact that they write the curses upon a piece of parchment and then it has to be dissolved in the water so that the ink goes into it and so on. This is all part of the ritual, and you know, and the priest has to give her the water. And he says to her, you know, if you have sinned, then in that case, may your belly swell, and et cetera, et cetera, right. But if not, then may you be found guiltless, and may you be blessed with children. Okay. So, the question is, who has to drink? In other words, which sota is required to take this mayim hamaorin? Okay. I'm not going to get through detail, for example. If the woman would have confessed, then in that case she certainly doesn't have to take it, because the confession is worth more. This is really a test, it's not, you know. So that's one case where she's excused. Okay. Now, he gave the following testimony, that is Akavya ben Mehalel, and he says that also a woman who is a Gioris, in other words, a woman who has been converted to Yiddishkeit, or a Mishuchreres, if she is a woman who was a slave at one time and then was given her freedom. So neither of these two women would be required to drink, you know, this mayim hamaorin. This is what he said. Okay? However, Chacham disagree with him. But the sages say, mashkin. They say, no, on the contrary, we do give her to drink, even if she is a convert or a former slave, okay? A freed slave.
How often did they do this?
Well, we don't know how often they did it. Obviously, they did it from time to time. I assure you, didn't happen every day in the week, okay? But occasionally there would be a case of it, right. But you know what the Gemara says in Saita? It says that when men themselves began to fornicate more than they should, so they abolished the whole thing, because they said, I mean, why single out the woman when the men are not behaving any better, you see? Yeah. So that was the end of it. But we have, for example, the Mishnah mentions that there was a famous convert to Judaism, Queen Helena.
Sure, she wrote the golden
right. She had this whole Parsha, the Sota, written on a tablet of gold, so that the Kohen, who was officiating the Beis HaMikdash, could read it at the time when he had to go through the ceremony, because he had to say psukim to the woman and she had to answer omein omein, you see. So we know then that even in the latter days of the second Beis HaMikdash, it was still being practiced from time to time. Mm-hmm.
But anybody drinking that that concoction would not only get sick, I would think.
It doesn't say that they added vodka to it. I don't know.
You don't know what it means. It says their the belly would
Right.
The thigh would fall away. Now, what do they mean? The thigh would fall away. What is
what it means is it would waste away.
Waste away.
Right. She would lose all her sexual power and things like that. So, that's what essentially what they're trying to imply. She would become Mias kite, okay?
Yeah.
Mias kite. You know what Mias is?
No, I don't like
ugly. Ugly. Ugly.
Ugly. Ugly.
Not just ugly, but right. Ugly.
Real ugly.
Super dog. Super dog.
Mias kite. I need to eat dog because of it. Mias kite.
Is that a Hebrew word too?
It's a Hebrew word. Mias means something that you despise.
Yes.
Yeah, but in Yiddish it became a noun used in this sense.
Mias kite, yeah.
Right.
Mias,
Mias, you get so.
Never know
it
was a Hebrew word.
Yeah. Lema'ais means to despise something. And Mias is the noun, verbal noun. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it actually took on a different connotation.
Yeah, in Yiddish it has a somewhat different twist, correct. Okay, so. He says that these women are not given, and the Chacham say, Mashka, she does get it, all right? So that was case number one, and the story continues now, what happened? Yomulo, so they told Akavi ben Mahalal, they said, Masavik Harkamis, Shivcha Mishachar Mishalayim, there's a certain woman by the name of Karkamis, who was a freed slave living in Yerushalayim. According to Rashi, Karkamis is either her name, or it means that she came from a place called Karkam or something like that. The E at the end very often indicates the person who comes from whatever it may be. Okay, like Chomeini Yemashma, from a place called Chomein or something like that. Okay, but similar. In other words, there are names like that in Arabic and in Hebrew and so on and so forth. Yeah. Of course, today also they use it for other names, like for example, Birnbaum became Agassi, and things like that. You see, Birnbaum means a pear tree, literally. So Agassi is a pear. So Agassi, silver became Kaspi, and things like that. Yeah, gold became Sahavi, and the same thing is true for Goldstein and Goldberg, and so on, and things like that.
So these became Hebrew
surnames. Yeah, they became Hebrew names.
Surnames, yeah.
All right. So, getting back over here to the story about Karkamis, Shifcha Mishcho Mishalayim, Yishkuho, Shmaya V'Atayon, and Shmaya V'Atayon, two of the great teachers, they were, of course, the predecessors of Hillel and Shammai, and they made her drink the Mayim Hamorim. Because she was a Sotish, considered a suspect by her husband. The Yom Alehem, and he said to them, Dugma Ishkuha. That means that he said, that is, Akavya ben Mahalalel said to the rabbis, Dugma, someone just like her is the one who caused her to drink. What he was doing was insulting Shmaya Natalion. Shmaya Natalion, we learned, there's a Gemara in Gittin, which says that they were descendants of Sancheirith, the king of Assyria, okay? Uh-huh. In other words, someplace back in their ancestry, they had Goyish ancestors, but they became converted to Yiddishkeit. So, what he said is to slur Shmaya Naphtalion by saying, well, listen, what do you expect from, Halbe Goyim like them, that they acted the same way towards her. So when they heard that Shmaya Naphtalion was being insulted by him, so v'niduhu. Then they put him under the ban, they excommunicated him. Umeis v'niduyo. And he died while he was still under the ban. In other words, the ban had not been lifted from him. He hadn't begged, in other words, for forgiveness or whatever it may be, so that he died And what was the punishment? Bisoklu Bezdin is Arona. And so the Bezdin threw stones at his casket. In other words, to show, right, you know, that he deserved the penalty of death because he had never recanted, he had never expressed his regrets, his sorrow for having insulted two great teachers in Israel, Shmuel and Talmud. Okay, so that was case number one. And what is the story about the person who was negligent? In other words, he made mock of the whole business of washing your hands before a meal. Did not, as we have learned, we have a mission that says, "Amar Rabbi Yehuda, chas v'sholem she'akavi b'mahalel nisnada." So Rabbi Yehuda said, "God forbid that we should say that Akavi ben Mahalel was ever thrown into excommunication." Because the gate, that is the Azora, the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, was never Ninelis, it was never shut upon any man in Israel who ever was as great in wisdom, in purity, or in fear of sin as the Kaviyah ben Mahalalel. So it could not have been him who we were talking about in the previous case, and who he said was placed under the ban. But rather, who was it? Ela esminidu, they put under excommunication as Elazar ben Chanoch, a certain guy by the name of Elazar ben Chanoch. Why? Shepikpek ben Tilas Yadayim. Because he expressed his doubts about the importance of washing hands. You know, he made light of it. He said, well, you don't have to wash your hands before it. What to me is interesting is, you know, from time to time I've read a little bit of the New Testament, okay? To a certain extent you have to be prepared sometimes in case you get involved
with Goyim,
you know, who is starting to argue scripture with you and so on.
Sure.
This is one of the big issues that Yoshka had with the Purushim, with the Pharisees.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he criticized them. You say that the man has to wash his hands. There's nothing, he says. You don't have to wash any hands. You should only have a pure heart. You don't have to wash your hands. So it's interesting to me that from this story we see that there's an echo
where he got his ideas
in what he had to say, you know, and what we find over here, although this came earlier than Yoshua's.
So that's story. Where he got his may have gotten
but
his
he
idea.
Got that idea, right? There's also another argument that he gave us about Shabbos. That you know, he told his disciples they can go out and cut food down in the field on Shabbos. And he says, because the Sabbath is made for man and not man for the Sabbath. No, it so happens that the Gemara also says the Sabbath is made for man, not man for the Sabbath, but they meant it in a different way. What the Gemara meant was that it's permitted to violate the Shabbos in order to save
a life.
That's the reason why they said what they said. But, you know, he came along and he simply took a statement that he heard, and he gave it a knach, you know, which had no business in it. It was a false interpretation of what he had to say.
He said he walked on water, did he?
that's a story. Yeah.
But he knew where the rocks were. Though.
Right.
Either that or he wrote Hashem's name.
There's all kinds of stories. I mean, we're not obligated to believe all the stories that we read about.
Unfortunately, you hear a lot of Jews today say, "Well, as long as I'm good in my heart."
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's not enough.
It's a cardiac.
The heart is very important. I mean, remember, there's a famous story told in Pirkei Avos, the second parak, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five students, and he asked them, "Go out, tell me," he says, "what is the highest? You know, what is a derech tova? What is a good way in life that a person should choose?" Okay, so one said chover tov. Another one said shochen tov. In other words, be a good friend, be a good neighbor. Another one said that arois hanoylod. Whenever you do something, foresee. You know, you should try to see what the consequences of what you do will be, and so on. And finally, he came to Elazar ben Aroch, the fifth of his students, and he says to him, "Lev tov, a good heart." So he said, "I like this formulation because everything that you said is included within this. But it doesn't mean that if a person says that I have a good heart, I'm a good Jew at heart, that means that he's doing all the other things, you know, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said you have to do in order to really qualify as having a good heart, you see. Someone once gave the term cardiac Judaism to this idea. Cardiac Judaism. I don't know if you ever heard these.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Good Jew at heart.
Yeah, good Jew at heart.
Okay. So, anyway, to continue over here, so this Elozer ben Chanoch, Shapikpek ben Telsit, I am right, Ruchshemeis, and when he died, Sholchu Bezdin, the Hinichu Evin Gedoy Laronei. So the Bezdin sent, and they placed a heavy stone upon his casket. Again, to show you the same as what we read before, L'lamedcho, to teach you, Shekol HaMisnadeh, U'meis B'nintuyoy, that whoever is placed under the ban of excommunication and dies while he's still under excommunication, then Bezdin Soklin is Aronot. Then the Bezdin, you know, has to put stones on his casket. Now, what was the third case that was mentioned? It was Hamegis Dato Klabi Mala. He acted in a very familiar, wise guy fashion towards Rabbeinu Shalem. Mike, what case are we talking about over here? Ditna, as we have learned. Sholach Lo Shimon Ben Shetach Lechoni Hamagel. Shimon Ben Shetach sent the following message to Choni Hamagel. First of all, I have to tell you, Shimon ben Shetach was again one of the great early rabbis. He came even before Shmaya Naftali.
Mm-hmm.
He was earlier than them. You know, in the beginning of Pirkei Avos, the first chapter, you have statements made by some of the great early sages, okay, who eventually became the sages of the Mishnah. So you have the story about Shimon ben Shetach, you know, what he used to love to say, and then you have Shmaya Naftali, and so on. Finally, the next pair after that is Hillel and Shammai. Okay.
Some of those are incorporated in Siddur today.
Yeah, because Asidurim reprint, you know, the Pirkei Avos, since, you know, it's, well, first of all, it's a mitzvah to study it beginning after Pesach until Rosh Hashanah. You do every week, you do a different chapter, and then you go over again, the cycle again, so that this past Shabbos was again chapter 1, this coming Shabbos again will be chapter 2, and so on. Okay? So, what I started to say is the fact that Shimon Shadak was one of the earlier rabbis, and we also find in the Gemara in Tainus some very, very beautiful stories about Choni HaMa'agel. Literally, Choni, the man who made circles. Okay? Why do they call him Choni HaMa'agel? Because it's told over there that one time, you know, there are various stories told about it, but one story that they tell about him is the fact that there was a drought. And so he said to the Beinu Shalom, he says, I'm making a circle around myself, and I'm not going to step out of this circle unless you send rain. So the Rabbeinu Shalom listened to Choni, and he sent down a downpour. The Choni wasn't happy with that. So he says, Rabbeinu Shalom, that's not the kind of rain that I asked for. So the Rabbeinu Shalom stop the rain completely. So he says, no, that's not what I asked for either, you know. So finally the Rabbeinu Shalom says, okay, here is a nice gentle rain. He says, yeah, that's what I want. Not too strong, at the same time not too dry, and so on. But when the story became current, so this is what Shimon ben Shetach said. He sent a message to Choni HaMagel, and he said to him, So Richa told him, he says, you know, you really deserve to be excommunicated because you talked to the Rabbeinu Shalom in such a language, you see. Yeah. And if it weren't the fact that you are Choni, only because you're Choni, right? Then I would personally have ordered that you be placed under the ban. What can I do? How can I act this way towards you? When you can you know, act in a familiar fashion before the Rabbeinu Shalom, and yet he does whatever it is that you ask him to do. So obviously you're like just like a son, you know, who acts cute, you know, in the presence of his father. And his father always gives him, you know, whatever it is that he wants. In other words, you have a very special relationship with the Rabbeinu Shalom that he grants your request, even though you talk to him in so familiar a fashion. And not only that, but concerning you, this is what the Pasuk in Mishlei, you know, in the book of Proverbs, means when it says, Yismach Avicha V'Imecha, may your father and your mother be happy. May she who gave birth unto you rejoice. In other words, you are like a favorite son of the Rebbeinu Shlomo. They tell all kinds of other very beautiful stories about Pnei HaMagal. But Yitzhak Hashem someday, I would love to learn kindness with you. Maybe after we finish Brachot to go into it. It's a tremendous amount of Agarata, and not so much Halacha. But the stories that are there are really very, very beautiful. Yeah, and I'd love to do it someday. So, someday maybe we'll get around to it, okay?
God willing.
Yitzhak Hashem. Okay. Vesu Leka. Now we get back to the original question. Remember, the first guy came along, and what did he say? He said that there are 24 places I counted. But so far, how many have we had?
Three.
So you say, Vesu Leka, tell me, aren't there any more areas, any more places? Vayika. Yeah, there is. Ditani Rav Yosef. As for example, we learned a statement in the name of Rav Yosef that Todos or Todros Ishromi, guy, you know, a rabbi or a sage by the name of Todos, or according to others, it was Todros. Todros, of course, is like the English name Theodore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Who lived in Rome. Hinhig is B'nai Roma. He was a rabbi in Rome. So he had the Jews in Rome practice the custom La'achilon Gidoyim Mikulosim B'leili Pesachim, that on the night of Pesach, in other words, for the Seder night, they should eat in Rome Gidim, these are kids, Mikulosim. Mikulosim means prepared after the fashion of the Korban Pesach, wherein the entrails of the animal and Rosh and Krovi Al Kibo, yeah, the entrails and the knees, the ankles, okay, I guess what do you call them, the legs or something, mm-hmm. of the animal were placed on top of the head of the animal, and that's the way it was broiled over the fire. Now this was the recommended way of how to prepare the Korban Pesach in the Beis HaMikdash. So what's wrong over here? Of course, what's wrong is very simple. Are we permitted to do this? Let's say if we wanted to, we're not allowed to. Why aren't we allowed to?
No Beis HaMikdash.
No Beis HaMikdash, exactly. But not only that, even if we had a Beis HaMikdash, if we were in Rome and not in Yerushalayim,
we wouldn't do it.
Are we allowed to do it?
No.
No, because that's only to do in the Beis HaMikdash. As a matter of fact, the halacha is, you know, that we do not, for the Seder night, roast or broil meat and serve it. I mean, many people think, you know, that you're permitted to roast meat or to broil meat for the Seder night. You're not allowed to. But why not? Because we should not seem as if we were performing an act as if we were offering a sacrifice outside the Beis HaMikdash. You're not allowed to be makriv, you know, makriv chulin b'chutz. You're not allowed to perform sacrifices of chulin. Chulin means any kind of an animal which is not sacred, you know, outside of the temple's precincts. We're not allowed to. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, Sholach Le Shimon Ben Shetach. So Shimon Ben Shetach sent a message to him. By the way, this was still during the time...